Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Well, I'm back from Alaska, and this hour we're going to be talking about the mind. And the topic we're going to be discussing is the mental environment. Have you ever heard of anything called mind pollution? Well, if you haven't, I think you're going to find this interesting. My guest today is Bob Gebelin, and he is a man that has dedicated himself to understanding many aspects of mind, how it affects the actions of an individual. Bob, welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm glad to be here.
Well, it is so, your book was, I would have to say, rather unique in that you are approaching thinking from about the mind, from a bit of a different paradigm, but I have to say it's not really that different. It's just a little bit where maybe it can assist people with the process of learning how to evaluate, how to look at things differently. Let's talk about you. How did you find yourself going into this exploration with the mind? When did this all start for you?
Well, this is a long, long story. Because of the threat of nuclear annihilation and other major cultural problems, I just decided we needed a new civilization, and I set out to design a new civilization, I didn't have any idea where I was going. There was nobody to help me. I think my main the main avenue where I found success was going through psychotherapy. Instead of letting the philosophical thoughts go round and round in circles in my head, I went to a psychiatrist. He kept my face to the mirror, and we made some progress. After 4 years, he told me I was okay, so I left. And about a few years later, we're talking in the 60s now, 1967 happened to be the same winter of Haight-Ashbury, but I was doing dream analysis here in Provincetown, here on Cape Cod. The solitude of the Cape Cod winter, I was able to dream at night and analyze my dreams all day, and I did this intensively and exclusively for about 3 months, and I got an education from this. And the dream analysis led me, I realized that, discovered that what was psychologically okay is not really anywhere near the human potential. The normal human being is not functioning at anywhere near his or her psychological potential. And I discovered a transition point where the sort of selfishness of the normal, what greed and selfishness is what is the reason our economic system works, or used to work anyway. It's now kind of seems to be destroying itself. But anyway, The average person looking out for oneself but psychologically a little bit beyond the norm is a point where that norm changes into an equally strong desire to help other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people have reached this through drugs. Unfortunately, through drugs they come back down, and some people reach it naturally, if they're fortunate to grow up. But this is basically my discovery, and I discovered I I realized that if a majority of the people were to reach that same level of psychological development, we would have a new civilization. We would not have greed. We would have things like socialism would work instead of sort of being falling into various patterns of greed. Anyway, am I answering your question?
Well, I think you're giving some insight into how your journey evolved, which I feel is always important to share, because all of us must live through experiences. I haven't found anybody that's been dropped in fully equipped with everything in order and just having the ahas all together all at one moment. I'm not seeing that. I've never seen it, and perhaps that's my own ignorance. But to the best of my knowledge in this world, we have to evolve, we have to grow. I was intrigued when I went through your book because really you're sharing your story. You're sharing how you evolved from what you perceived as some misconceptions into an understanding of a bigger picture relative to the wellness of the world and how much our minds have to do with that. And right in the very beginning of your book, and I loved this description, and I'll read it exactly, we're immersed in a sea of other people's thoughts, ideas, theories, perceptions, worldviews, information, misinformation, hypnotic suggestions, fiction, prejudices, judgments, manipulations, ridicule, and horror movies. I thought, boy, you really worked hard to get all those descriptions together, those words really very succinctly form pictures in someone's mind. And I was just, day before yesterday, talking with someone who had gone through a great deal of challenge because they had labeled themselves as a very bad individual because of some choices they had made. And this was from an indoctrination that they had adopted through their life. And when we were able to really talk about the truth of what evolved, this person realized they didn't need to beat themselves up anymore. It was merely experience, and it was time to move on. They didn't have to carry an unnecessary burden, and this was a very responsible, caring individual. And this, your book, The Mental Environment, addresses this. It addresses how our mental environment we need to cultivate and we need to tend like a good gardener, and being aware that weeds are going to pop up every once in a while, and we have to clear them out. And sometimes we really have to do the weeding first, don't we? We have to prime and prepare and really think about how we want our mental environment to be.
I've done a lot of weeding. It's interesting because when I have a problem, sometimes weeding the garden helps me to, you know, solve it. But absolutely, I've done that 4 years of psychotherapy was a lot of weeding, because it wasn't just 2 hours a week with a psychiatrist. It was like going home and sitting in the dark and thinking about everything that we had said. I'm chuckling at that. All those words that I used at the beginning to describe the mental environment, that just kind of flowed out of me. I wrote all that in about 2 minutes.
Amazing. But
there are other parts of the book that I struggled with a year and a half to, you know, to get a chapter. But that just, you know, okay, what am I talking about here? All right, there are, you know, all these things, information, misinformation, horror movies. I forget exactly what I said, but it's all part of, I mean, Frankenstein is all part of our mental environment. The dinosaurs, when I was a kid, they had this movie, Fantasia, with dinosaurs, and it terrified me for, you know, a long couple of years anyway. Anyway, this is getting off the subject. My mental development came through a lot of hard work, and as I describe it, I was stopped at age 4 psychologically, so I had to get from a psychological age 4 to a psychological age adult, and that actually from 4 to 18, and that's sort of where I stopped it. took about the 14 years that it would take if you were a child. Now, I had friends that I grew up with in school, actually three friends, who were lucky enough to mature psychologically, naturally, and get up to psychological age 18 without benefit of psychiatrists and all that. But they were like 3 out of 300. They're the 1%. And one of them is president of a company, another is the first lady of a small country, and forget the, oh, the third has died, sorry. But that's not his fault. Anyway, I'm probably getting off the subject now.
Well, I think, Bob, you're making a point that is a very interesting one, because recently there has been more and more conversation that I have become aware of that any parent with a teenager will say, good gracious, we've got this teenager here, they just don't get it. And it's as if the brain does not function. So your statement about maturation of an individual, it's a different level. So when we become aware, as you did, and for your particular situation, you sought help, a lot of people don't. You did, and in the process and through ongoing education, in the fact that you were willing to read, you were willing to explore, you became cognizant of the factor that every society, I don't care where you are in the world, every society has its social dictums. Those social dictums, good, bad, or indifferent, have a tremendous influence on us. And what I liked about your book was your honesty about how you, through your journey, began to recognize how you had to think for yourself, how you had to step out of the box of what was considered the right thing to do, to honestly analyze it, to ask yourself, is this the right thing for me to do? And I think that that takes a maturation, to be willing to explore and then not to condemn whatever is there and just say, I've got to walk to my own drummer. And I mean, I can remember hearing that from the time I was a child, and I could not understand it until I got into my 30s.
There were motivations. I mean, you know, I talk about the threat of nuclear annihilation. That was one of them. The technology was working fine, but the uses we were putting it to, and the society, you know, with the Soviets and Americans and the word overkill, we had the capacity to kill the population of the world many times over, in case there are young people who haven't heard that particular word. It was terrifying, but there were other things, too. I was grew up rich, privileged, good-looking, musically talented, athletically talented, all those things. Girls were attracted to me, which was very important, and yet I wasn't happy. I mean, so here's the American dream comes true. Here I am, what the American dream, my great-grandfather, who came over from Germany and worked as a bookkeeper and so forth and so on. And I wasn't happy, and you were supposed to be happy when you had all this. Well, something's wrong with the system. I mean, the social influences in my life were breaking down, and the third thing was I read The Wasteland by T.S. Eliot, which I don't know whether it's even appropriate now in this century, but I said, that's my world. I'm living it. And, you know, here's this sort of boredom and this dry world where there's no water and, you know, and no life. And here I am living artificiality, I think is the word. So I was had the society wasn't giving me the answers. And I turned to T.S. Eliot in the poem, and I said, well, what's the answer? And he said, shall I at least set my lands in order?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I said, that's not the answer. I'm the golden boy. You know, these other people need to set their lands in order. All these Russians.
Oh, boy. Ah, yes. It's out there. It's not me. It has nothing whatsoever to do with me. Oh, yes.
that's very important, and I struggled with that. No, it's these other guys, and there were people who admired me. And when I went to a psychiatrist, oh my God, I admire this guy, and he's going to a psychiatrist, so I must be in real bad shape. Anyway, I just forgot what I was going to say.
Let's just stop there for a moment, because you're bringing out a point of your time frame, Bob, and what you were evolving through. Today's world is frightening to a lot of individuals. It is almost a common occurrence in the fact that I'm a broadcaster and I meet so many different people and they start talking to me. And just yesterday, when I was on my flight back from Alaska to come back home to the Pacific Northwest, I encountered a young woman who was so concerned about so many things that were going on, and she was speaking from her heart. And there are things that she really wants to see done. Well, she is a young woman who has been dealing with some very, very serious situations in the family. And she is so responsible, and she's so caring, and she really wants to make a difference in the world. And I made some suggestions to her, but just in listening, for her as a young person, her feelings are just like yours were in your generation. She's concerned. Is the world going to be able to survive the ugliness, the violence that is there? I just recently reviewed material where there's horrific violence. I'm going to have a guest on next month who, as a journalist, a reporter, is traveling to areas overseas that are so violently ugly that her job is, in her mind, to tell the truth, to bring the story out. So what you're describing, every generation seems to battle it. And in your book, you talk about the accuracy of thought. And you say it's easier to observe a ball rolling down an inclined plane than to observe human thought processes. And I went, amen to that one.
Okay, yeah, I'm just, of course, defending psychology as it used to be and saying, I mean, Freud and Jung were right, and now the psychologists are going off and studying physical behavior. They're not looking at the mind. The early psychologists tried to look at their mind. I mean, you observe the mind. You say, okay, I had a dream, and I dreamed X, Y, and Z. Now they're putting you in a machine that reads your brain patterns, saying a dream is nothing but this random brain pattern. Well, you know, it's more than that. And
oh, very much so.
The whole bias has gone toward physical science, and as I explain it, it's gone by a method which I call status snobbery, and it uses invalid methods of argument, and these people are so fussy about doing their precise physical science, or using all kinds of invalid methods to put down things like psychology or the study of the mind, and I am... You know, observing the mind, of course, the John B. Watson, who I refer to in the book, is trying to say the mental doesn't exist. I mean, he was the original behaviorist and steered the psychologists away from the study of the mind. But the study of the mind is hard. It's not as easy to do as the study of physics, which started with the ancient Greeks who formulated the idea of an atom, and now we've gone beyond that. And they have this huge machine now that I'm not sure what it does. It doesn't quite work. Anyway, we're getting farther and farther out in physics and describing things. But the mind, we're really just beginning, and the early psychologists have actually steered us away from the mind. It's hard to do, and it's faced with prejudices, data snobbery, the physical scientists have the power to call up a publisher and say, we don't want you to publish this, or they have the power to say, we don't want these people in our scientific organization. And they discussed the whatever parapsychology, which was approved, I think, in the 60s. And then some guy went around saying, let's get the weirdos, let's get the pseudos out of science. And just on the basis of this, which is not a valid argument, it's what I talk about under mind pollution. It's an insult. It's like saying, let's get the jerks out of science. I mean, well, who's the jerk? You know, and it's not a very logical argument.
Well, Bob, don't you think, though, that every generation, when we look at so many things as they were perceived, even centuries ago, the Arabs had an understanding of psychology and the Chinese that were just beginning to get a grasp on certain levels. And as they're discovering more and more written documents, more archives, this is presenting almost an affirmation to the fact that the mind is so powerful. Now, let's talk about mind pollution for a minute. You listed a number of different components of mind pollution. Let's talk about what we can do about that mind pollution, because each of us as an individual must take on the responsibility for overseeing our garden, our mental garden, if you will. What would you recommend to my listeners so that they can be, I know that they may be interested in reading your book, The Mental Environment, mostly about mind pollution, but what kind of attentive things can a person do to, one, be conscious of the mind pollution, and two, not have it affect them?
Conscious of it. I just suddenly, it's really hard, because if you're a member of a group, you really have to believe or claim to believe what that group sort of believes and go along with the way they think. And I've managed to separate myself from that by separating myself from groups. I pick my friends one at a time, and that's a result of being in a group where there was a leader, and under the leader's direction, they all ridiculed me, and I said, I don't need this. These aren't my friends. These people don't love me. And I just, I've been a solitary person a great deal of my life. I think that's part of the reason. I've avoided the mind pollution. Once outside it, then I started to smoke, for example. Well, the kids here in Provincetown were kidding me. You're the straight arrow, because I didn't smoke. But it was when I went to camp, summer camp in New Hampshire, the guys I liked, you know, I just said, okay, how about give me a cigarette, you know, and it wasn't any force. So I had in my mind all the time this resistance to this kind of social pressure of people teasing me and ridiculing me and actually beating me up. I became a jock so that kids wouldn't beat me up, and it succeeded. And then I physically, they didn't dare do anything, and mentally, like I say, they kidded me and called me straight arrow. So there is this pressure, especially you're talking about adolescents. Right now I have a little pod of great-grandnephews and nieces, and I don't even know how to communicate with them. I'm just hoping, you know, they're not quite old enough to read my book, but maybe someday they'll read my book and, oh, Uncle Bobby's book. I don't even know how to speak to adolescents. I'm just putting this book out there for anybody who might be interested, and sort of I find my readers sort of one at a time.
Well, the material you have, I think, in many ways, is timeless. It's been my observation whenever I have done any reading of history that every generation has its challenges. Every generation has its wars. Every generation has its privations, its joys. And each generation has to deal with those particular situations accordingly. And the evolution of thinking the evolution of observation usually comes from interacting with other people or actually being challenged. You know, you gave the example of when you were growing up and how there was a particular mindset about smoking. That's a great one. So here you go, and it's not that big a deal, but you decide you're going to do it, but eventually you made a choice that this was something that wasn't important to you anymore. But you did it because of peer pressure, and that can be at any age. And that is where it is significant when someone will say, I choose not to be a part of an environment. I choose to make a choice as an individual to go into a different direction or to act differently. And I think that is something when it comes to mind pollution. If you're watching television and there's horrific violence that's on there, you don't want it, change the channel. If you're going to want to nourish your mind, maybe you go to school, but maybe you'll find that in school that the people that are teaching do not know as much as you know. Maybe you have been a person that's been an avid reader. So what do? Do you condemn the teacher? No. But you observe. You pay attention. And I think all of this is so very, very important when it comes to mind pollution. If you had a suggestion, Bob, that you would like to give to someone, to my listeners, regarding their mental environment, what is the first thought that comes into your mind?
Well, I'm just thinking, I list things and say, these are invalid arguments. I mean, somebody calling you a jerk or an idiot or a moron is obviously false. And then it goes from there to the more plausible arguments, like somebody calling me crazy. Well, we're all crazy to each other to some degree, you know. So nobody can ever prove they're crazy or not crazy. But there are all these, again, invalid arguments. They're not factual. Bob Gebelein is 6 feet tall and weighs 240 pounds and is 74 years old. These are factual arguments, and went through psychotherapy and did this and that. It's the smear tactics, and they're engineered to get you emotionally. Now, in the old days, people just killed each other off before there were laws and all that. Now we have the character assassination and the smear tactics. People do what I call mental warfare, and especially in the teenage gang, or when you go to school, there are young Attila the Hun is waiting for you, and he knows all from some maybe past incarnations how to do all kinds of warfare, and becomes the gang leader and knows how to manipulate, knows how to get everybody on his side, and if you're not with him, you're hopelessly beat up all the time. I don't know answers, except, as I say, my answer was, okay, I'm going to become an athlete, and then they won't beat me up, and that worked. I think my book is just lists some of the things. These are arguments that are not valid, they'll expose you, again, I'm repeating myself, to physical beating up and emotional beating up, but these are the things you have to resist and somehow learn to, you know, defend yourself against or get away from or fight back, you know. Anyway.
Well, Bob, you are a man of mature years and a man who wants to leave a legacy for those that are younger, of a world perhaps that they will hopefully never ever experience, especially the fears as you expressed that you had when we first started talking. But what it is, I think it is a legacy that encourages thinking. And that's what I got, your analysis of be able to look at what is being said. Is it fact? Is it something you're responding to emotionally because you feel vulnerable? What are the facts? My guest today has been Bob Gebelein. His book is The Mental Environment. His website is omdega.com. That's omdega.com. He's a man 74 years young and wants to share what he has learned in his life of experience, and I think he's given us quite a nice gift, the mental environment, mostly about mind pollution. Bob, thank you so much for being my guest today.
Well, thank you for your high praise of my book, and I also want to say Amazon.com, The Mental Environment, probably a more trusted source if you're looking for my book.
Wonderful. Thank you, Bob. Continue to have a very rich and full life. You're 74 years young, and I hope you tell more of your stories for the future.
Okay.
Thank you, Bob. This is Donna Seba. We're taking a break. I'm back in the Pacific Northwest where the winds, whoa, they're starting to blow. And we're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Okay.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Seba. That's right. Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. To Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Seba and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today, 800-872-8852.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Seba. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Oh, it feels so good to be back in my own home turf, although I have to tell you that Alaska is an absolutely spectacular environment. I just love it. I've been traveling up there for almost 30 years now, and it is just such a joy to be able to go up there. But it's getting cold up there, and snow's coming in. The mountains were just absolutely gorgeous where they're deep, deep snow piles, and they're going to be growing even faster. And I come home, and by golly, the winds of fall are blowing, and I'm out in front sweeping and just trying to get up so many of those needles that seem to dry up on trees, and then when the winds blow, they fall on everything and get into everything. But, oh, it is just so beautiful here. It is fall with all of its glory. The trees are changing color, and wherever you are, I hope you'll take the time to go out and to walk and to just enjoy your neighborhood environment. Of course, if you're in Arizona, you're not going to be seeing this, but if you're anywhere else where the trees are changing color, enjoy them, because it is, to me, one of the best seasons of the year. Of course, I like all the seasons, but there's just something that's always been magical to me about fall. Maybe it's because when I was growing up, as with so many young people today, it's when school starts and you just have so many things that are happening, and you go out and you get your clothes and you get everything ready, because you just have to be prepared, especially for those of us that live in the parts of the country where it's four seasons. Well, hey, telephone lines are open. Yes, you're going to be able to call in and chat with me if you would so desire, and I'd be delighted to give you a reading on the air. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, it's 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And all I need from you, if you're a first-time listener, all I need is your first name or initial, and then after that, just let me tell you what I perceive, and then you're welcome to ask me a question about anything you like. Also, I want to let those of you know in the state of Washington that are listening to the show today, I'm going to be doing an appearance at the Boeing Parapsychology Expo. It is at Kent Commons, which is in Kent, Washington. It's an all-day event. It's just marvelous. And I was so fortunate this year to be able to have some time to be able to do it. And so I will be there doing many consultations. And also, I'm going to have Buku books there. So you're going to have a lot of stuff if you want to peruse through. And just go to their website, the Boeing Parapsychology Expo website. You will find that they have all kinds of details there. They'll give you the hours of the event. They'll tell you, you know, who's going to be there, what's going on, and there's just all kinds of good information. So I look forward to seeing you there. Come by. Say hello. I would just be delighted to meet you. Also, what's coming up, yes, this microphone is going to be traveling to Tampa, Florida. I'm going to be attending a retreat with Teresa Tapp. I'm going to be seeing firsthand action and activity regarding getting physically fit, and I'm going to be interviewing some of the people that have had wonderful success with the program that she does. For those of you who are regular listeners, you've heard Teresa, and you know how much she has in the way of wellness information and physical fitness to share. Well, we're going to be right there on site, bringing it live to you on the Donna Sebo Show. So that's going to be the 2nd and the 3rd and the 4th of October that this is going to be going on. Also, starting in October, yes, there is going to be another major event, and that is the Wisdom Festival. Now, this is a festival in San Francisco at Fort Mason, and people come in from all over to be able to attend this wonderful event, and I invite you to come. I'm going to be a speaker there. They're going to have speakers from all over the country. There are products and services from all over the world, and you're really going to enjoy yourself. So if you're in the San Francisco area, or you want to just fly in for a very special event, if you're down in Los Angeles and you'd like to come up to the northern area of the state, it is a great thing to do. Perfect weather. Perfect time of the year, absolutely gorgeous, and you will have a fabulous time. So go to wisdomfestival.com, that's wisdomfestival.com, and you will find that you will get all of the details, the information, ticket prices, the primary speakers, special classes that are going to be going on, and much, much more. So I'm privileged to be able to be a part of that as well. So, yes, this is going to be one traveling lady, and that event is going to be the 17th, 18th, and 19th of October, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I hope you can come by and say hello. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227, Canadians 888-815-9756. Just give me a buzz, and I'd be delighted to light up your life with a little bit of insight. Computers. Oh, you can love them, you can hate them, but wow, they can do a lot. When they work and they work right, they are such a useful tool. They really, really are. And no matter where you go anymore, most hotels or motels, they will have a computer that's available for guests. So you're always able to check in on email and do so much, much more. However, there is a wonderful batch of information that I came across by Ken Lebo. And he talks about so many different things that you can do on the internet. And I thought, boy, I've got to share this with you because who doesn't want to become more savvy? Now, maybe you're one of these technologically savvy people and this is going to be old hat to you. But for those of us that may not be all that technologically savvy, this is good stuff. You can swap information and skills. There is so much interest in sharing via the internet. You know, if you want to find out about recipes, I've got these wonderful websites. Let me just share them with you. Bakespace.com. Bake, B-A-K-E, space.com. You can post, search, and trade recipes. Yes, people love to do this. It's one of the favorite activities of so many individuals. I have girlfriends I get together with, and often we end up talking about food. And they'll say, oh, my grandmother had a recipe, and oh, gee whiz, we have this. What's one of the primary things we're all interested in? Feeding ourselves, right? And sometimes we pretty much stay with most of what we're accustomed to. We all have our favorite things, but sometimes we want to try something different. Also, the gardening forum at gardenweb.com. Gardenweb.com. You're going to be able to interact with people, find out all kinds of advice regarding the type of stuff maybe you should plant, what type of gardening you might be interested in, and find out what's best for your region. If you want to find out about your family tree, genealogy, well, that is one of the best tools to use is the internet. You can find an internet website, and there's all kinds of them, but this one was mentioned, genie.com, that's G-E-N-I.com. You can build your own family tree. I had a woman that I'd gone to school with, and she had spent over 30 years trying to find me. And she met a detective in a genealogy class, and he said, oh, this is what you do. And she had been for years trying to locate me, and by golly, she traced me down via public records in a very unique way. I was really a surprise one day when I found a message from someone I hadn't talked with for 33 years, leaving a message on my phone that they wanted to be in touch. So it's fascinating stuff. This is what she found the internet was very useful for. And if you love to do crafty things, boy, you can go to some wonderful sites. There's all of this information. I've got a sister-in-law that made some things for me, and she gets all of her patterns off of the internet. She doesn't buy books. She goes to the internet, and a lot of them are free. She's done some awesome stuff for me, and it's just amazing. But she said, that's where I go, Donna. That's what I do. Hey, she's in her 70s, for heaven's sakes, and I'm just absolutely in awe of her. She's just an amazing woman. Well, if you're into knitting and crocheting, try Ravelry.com. That's R-A-V-E-L-R-Y. Ravelry.com. Now, if you want to share pictures and videos, well, apparently there is a very, very interactive website at blogger.com, and they've got all kinds of information there. And then if you wanted to text message someone but you didn't know how to do it, you can go to this website, teleflip.com, T-E-L-E-F-L-I-P.com, and you can be instructed on how to do text messaging. By the way, I saw a young lady on the plane when I was flying home yesterday. I'm telling you, I've never seen a thumb move so fast in my life. She was texting with her phone using one hand, and her thumb was just going all over that pad. It was absolutely amazing to me, and I thought, how dexterous these young people are. I have to stop and think about if I'm going to do that kind of thing, what letter I'm going to push. But she's just gotten used to it, and she's just sending messages all the time. It's quite amazing. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. Give me a buzz if you want to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're going to be right back.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com. Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. Remember, all I need is your first name or initial. Now, this is what's coming on tomorrow. Tomorrow's going to be an open mic day. I've got a lot of different things I want to share with you. So if you want to call in at any time during the hour tomorrow, you're going to be able to do that. But we've got some dynamic people this week, one of whom is Russell Targ, and he's going to be on with me on Wednesday. Now, Russell has been a guest on my show more than once. This man worked with the CIA, has been involved in developing mind skills for the military, various individuals. This is his personal story, and it's titled, Do You See What I See? This man is terrific. His integrity and his enthusiasm about dealing with the paranormal and the psychic area and the development of same is just amazing. So you're going to find out what this was all about and how it developed. Fascinating man. Then we're going to be talking with Tom Benjay on Thursday. Doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs. Yes, we're going to be discussing Native Americans and what they have done, various things that they've accomplished. This is a historical record that Tom has put together. He's just an amazing man, and his tenacity of being able to get all the details and information about these various Native Americans is amazing. Bill George is going to be my guest. This is a man with an incredible business background, which you'll learn more about on Friday. But he had a book he put out called True North. Awesome publication. He was a guest on my show, and now he's come out with a workbook. You're not going to want to miss this. This is really good. So that's the lineup for this week, and I invite you to join us and tell your friends. And also remember, the program is archived for your listening convenience. So if you miss the show, you can just go right into bbsradio.com, go to Station 1, go to the Donna Sebo Show, and go into the archives, and you'll find everything is there for your listening pleasure. Again, give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. I have been donating blood to the Red Cross for a good deal of time. I really believe in it, and I basically got interested in doing it because of a very dear friend of mine who was hit by a drunk driver, and she needed blood for not a day, but for weeks. She almost died. She was pregnant at the time she was hit. So this was very important to me. And it was the blood donations that saved her life. And the call had gone out to a number of her friends. And that was such a meaningful experience to me. Now, when I was in a position to be able to do it on a regular basis, it became very important. Well, scientists have been working very, very hard because there is so much blood that is needed. And if you have a rare blood type like I do, people are not conveniently available. As you know, if you've ever given blood, you cannot give it for 8 weeks, and you have to allow your body to recuperate, because a pint of blood, which is what you donate, is a substantial amount. Why? The human body contains about a gallon and a half of blood. So when you take a pint out, you're taking out a chunk. So you can't do it all that often. It can be done, you know, every couple of months, max. Well, I got some information here about blood and how scientists are trying to work with producing blood that is going to be available for emergencies that will not be vulnerable to disease. Now, the human body, as I said, contains about a gallon and a half of blood. And this is technically fluid tissue. It has cells, specialized cells in it. It has plasma. And the blood nourishes organs with nutrients, oxygen, and other cells within the blood act as a metabolic garbage collector, and it also transports hormones. I mean, we've learned so much about the blood, but there's even more we're not even aware of. Now, the American Red Cross manages about 45% of the nation's blood inventory, and they are known for their very, very careful care of blood, and it can't be stored for very long. Now, the Food and Drug Administration recently brought out some information that the Red Cross needs to improve the donor screening and its tracking of problem blood. But scientists are saying, we have such tremendous population, what else can we do? We cannot always have enough donors. So what they want to do is create a blood substitute, and they've been working on this for years, but this is some of the stuff that has been going on that I want to share with you. With platelets targeting wounds, platelets will attach to blood vessels to form clots, preventing major blood loss. We all see that whenever we cut our fingers, and unless you're a hemophiliac, this is what you want to happen. Now, platelets are very difficult to get, and they must circulate constantly, and when they are removed from blood, they have a life of only 5 days, and those platelets can be carriers for bacterial infections. Now, they have tried to develop a synthetic platelet, and it's being tested at this time, and what they've found is that they can reproduce microparticles paired with a peptide that binds to the fibrinogen, the protein that is already present in the blood. And also red blood cells, well, we know how important those are, carrying oxygen throughout the body. Now, because of the wars that we have been involved with, battlefields in Afghanistan and all other places, red blood cells, really hard to come by. Now, scientists right now are testing synthetic compounds called perfluorocarbon emulsions that will be able to raise oxygen concentrations in one's blood, helping to boost oxygen flow following brain surgeries or when the heart is stopped during surgery. White blood cells are working on that too. White blood cells, they defend our bodies. They're so important. They have never been artificially produced, but they found that they can alter them for other uses. There's researchers at the National Cancer Institute in Bethesda, Maryland, that have engineered what they call lymphocytes, a type of white blood cell from melanoma patients, to act as cancer-fighting T cells in the patient's own bodies. This is wonderful, wonderful information. Plasma, they're working on that too. What this says is the human being is capable, through the process of thinking, instead of being stuck in thinking of the past, looking at what the options and possibilities are for the future. And that is priceless. We should tip our hats to those who are willing to go beyond what is accepted and what is the norm to see what they can do to make things better. That is what makes this world improve on so many levels. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. But tomorrow is an open mic day. It's great to be home. Fall winds are blowing. wherever you are, though, enjoy. Enjoy the space, because you're blessed in so many ways, and you've got nothing but the best to look forward to. Expect it. Optimize it. Give the best of who you are. This is Donna Seabill. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Seabill Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Seabill Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.